The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
It's my body, my choice.
And that shame belongs on the religious institutions that have really heaped shame and now are driving this movement to use the state to hijack women's bodies and force them to have children against their will.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Wow. Let me give you some perspective on that. First, good afternoon. It's good to be back here with you again today. Looking forward to the next 3 hours with you. We can hang out and talk. What you just heard was audio from Lakewood Church. That's the church of Joel Osteen in downtown Houston, Texas. He's a Protestant evangelist, television personality, author. And apparently, I just learned about this story. Catholic churches have been targeted. I'll talk to you a little bit about what we're seeing here in our own country. Pro-life centers have been targeted. But I guess Joel's church had been targeted as well. It was interrupted. There was a church service going on. And a bunch of women went in, stripped down. They were yelling, "My body, my choice," until they were escorted out. That last bit of audio was from one of the organizers of the protest. Maggie, what were you hearing? You were just saying something to me before we came live. Why don't you share that as well?
One of the organizers said, basically, if religious organizations are able to picket and pray and intercept women on their way into abortion clinics, that they felt that it's their right to interrupt religious services and go to the source there.
Such bizarre logic that's used. I mean, it really is crazy. I had said to you before we went on, I said, I just don't understand why these people, they were escorted out. And then, of course, on the sidewalk there, they were talking about why they were doing that. But I'm thinking, well, where's the arrest? Why aren't they arrested for lewd and lascivious behavior, for public nudity, for disturbing the peace, for any of these types of things? They went into a church congregation and did something that I'm sure a lot of kids were exposed to and a lot of people did not want in that venue. I think it's the height of disrespect and irresponsibility. You told me that Joel continued to preach. Is that what he did? God bless him.
He did. He did. He just kept on preaching. He said, "God is good, and He is good all the time. And just hold on, folks." And turn your books to Nehemiah.
That is hilarious. I mean, it's an eye opener. It's a chapter, maybe a lesson, out of the book for a lot of Catholic priests as well, or others. This is probably going to happen in Catholic churches around the country as well. Already, we've seen a lot of attacks and a lot of other types of disturbances at churches and pro-life centers. But be prepared. There was news this morning that was breaking. The Supreme Court may come down with the decision on Dobbs. I don't think it's going to happen to the very last day of the Supreme Court session. That's my wager. That's my educated guess, my hypothesis on all this. I don't think it's going to happen until that last day because, already you saw streets being blocked in Washington, D.C., but, we need to pray for peace. We need to pray for the conversion of these people. And I see these stories. There's so much division in the country, right? There's so much division. We have to pray for unity. Earlier on Friday morning, there was another pro-life clinic that was set on fire. This one was in Gresham, Oregon. It's being investigated. Local and federal authorities are looking into it. Today, Archbishop William Laurie, acting as the chairman of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops Committee for Pro-Life Activities, he called on authorities. He wants them to be more aggressive in protecting those organizations and finding out who's doing this. And I want to say thank you, Your Excellency. Thank you very much. I think that's a great call. Here's what he said. I'll just share with what Bishop Laurie of Baltimore said. He said, quote, "Since the leak of the draft opinion in Dobbs versus Jackson's Women's Health Organization, charities that support pregnant mothers in need have been firebombed and pro-life organizations have been attacked almost daily. They've been terrorized. Even the lives of Supreme Court justices have been directly threatened. In light of this, we urge our elected officials to take a strong stand against this violence and our law enforcement authorities to increase their vigilance of protecting those who are in increased danger. We thank those who have already done so, and we encourage them to continue." he went on to say this: above all, each of us must choose the path of peace and open our hearts to the love that God has for his children. Oh, Sacred Heart of Jesus, touch our hearts and make them like your own, end of quote. I think it was a beautiful way to summarize that. You know, so often we want an eye for an eye. You know, people mistreat us. They firebomb organizations that are helping women. It's hard to be a Christian. I'm telling you, I was thinking about it. When I see this, because my Italian blood boils, and it's like, you know, you want an eye for an eye. You want to retaliate. You want justice, really. We are called to love, though. We're really called to pray for those who persecute us. And when you see this division, you're going to see a lot more of it in the month of June. I'm telling you right now, this month of the Sacred Heart, a month that's been co-opted. It's a month dedicated to the Immaculate and Sacred Heart of Jesus and Mary, or Mary and Jesus, I should say. And, you know, it's become Pride Month. And now we're going to see absolute, you know, chaos, I think, in the days ahead as this Dobbs decision becomes closer. So what can you do? Right? What can I do, Drew? I see it on the news. Maybe it's in the streets. You can pray. And I don't mean that lightly. And I call you to this just about every day. And I do it. And maybe we should amp up our sacrifice. Maybe we should do what the Virgin Fatima had told the seers, to make reparation. There are souls that are going to hell because there's no one to make sacrifices for them. That's what the Virgin Mary said. And I really think a lot of these people are disillusioned. I mean, they are on a pathway to hell. When you champion something as macabre and dark and evil as killing a child in the womb, and even, you know, after birth, some of these pieces of legislation are being put forward, you're really going to have a pretty serious accounting when you stand before the author of life, the giver of life. Let's pray for them. Eternity's a long time, you know. Most of these attacks are being carried out by a group called Jane's Revenge. And no one from the group has been arrested yet either. I find that fascinating. Why not? The name, as we've talked about in the past, comes from the name of a Chicago-based ring in the late 60s and early 70s called the Jane Collaborative, which obtained illegal abortions for women in the area. And you know, one claim states that about 11,000 children were killed as a result of that. And other than that, you know, we don't have much information on who they are, how many people are involved, how closely connected they are to different groups. But we're seeing protests, right? You're seeing that today at the home of Supreme Court justices in anticipation of what's going to happen. And I think they're early. I think we've got days before the Supreme Court is going to announce this. I mean, if I was a Supreme Court justice, whether I was Amy Coney Barrett or Kavanaugh or any of these people whose, you know, kids and houses and lives are being threatened, I'd be concerned. You know, I'd want to make sure I got out of town as this decision went down. Justice Barrett, actually, speaking of her, her home is now being watched in particular by a group called Ruth Sent Us. And they've even tweeted out, you know, this is horrible. They were tweeting out where her children went to school. You know, that's too far. That crosses the line. And what's really frustrating, the media, right? And we've talked about this in the past. I'm not going to beat this point to death today, boy. But it is so frustrating. They continue to ignore what's happening in the Supreme Court justices, let alone the attempted assassination attempt of a sitting Supreme Court justice, Brett Kavanaugh. This weekend, on the political commentary shows, the only network that mentioned it was Fox. And Fox is not perfect. In fact, I'll talk to you a little bit later about something they did I think is terrible. But all the other networks were consumed with January 6th. They spend no time on this. With continuing protests right now outside the Supreme Court's homes, these justices' homes, a lot of people are asking, what is being done to curb this illegal behavior? Here's a little from the Wall Street Journal. Listen to this.
It's notable that neither the Justice Department nor local police and prosecutors in Maryland and Virginia, where the justices live, have moved against the protesters, though those protesters may be violating local ordinances against such demonstrations and a federal law that says you can't demonstrate outside judges' homes to intimidate them.
Exactly right. It's very disturbing what's going on. The federal law does say if it is your intent to influence the opinion of a judge, you may not, quote, picket or parade in front of their residence. Look at that. That is exactly what is going on. where is Attorney General Merrick Garland? Why hasn't Joe Biden condemned this and called them off? And if I may, I'm going to relate that to what we've just been talking about, the January 6th Capitol riot. The blame, in large part, falls with Donald Trump for seeing it and not telling them to stand down and stop doing it. Here we have these illegal demonstrations in front of the Supreme Court justices' houses, and the president of the United States and attorney general cannot bring themselves to tell these people to stand down. It is a very fine line between people peacefully protesting and then suddenly developing into a mob.
Yeah, two things there. One, they are trying to influence those justices. That's why they dox them. That's why they, you know, let some really crazy people know where the children are going to school, where there's been assassination attempts. I mean, look, there's a real, real issue there. Why do they do this? Why haven't we heard from the Biden administration? Why haven't they spoken out against this? Why hasn't there been greater security? Because this is all about the high holy sacrament that they worship at, and that's the culture of death. They love abortion, and anything that threatens it, they will do whatever they can to make sure that abortion is protected from that. Even if it means, you know, having Amy Coney Barrett's children, you know, possibly, you know, be in danger. I wouldn't want the country to know where my kids went to school if I was supporting a Supreme Court justice. Brett Kavanaugh, my gosh, there was an assassination attempt on this man. Now, granted, I think the person that did that was not mentally right, but clearly what if he didn't turn himself in? What if he followed through with that? So more's got to be done. But again, this is what happens when darkness infiltrates the mind, when it hardens the heart. That's what happens here. And this is at the very root of it. Very, very demonic. Very demonic. Well, one final story here for you, and we'll get to some other stories here too. Well, let me tell you about Fox before I tell you about what the Holy Father had to say. You know, because I think this is important too. Fox News, right? They may have been the only network to talk about Justice Kavanaugh, but they also carried a story that was a complete propaganda piece for the transgender movement. A lot of people are upset about this. You know, I'm not waving a Fox flag here. In fact, I MSNBC or CNN or whoever did, I'd do the same thing. And I want to call Fox out because I think this was terrible. Newsmax, they reported as part of a Fox News special series called America Together, LGBTQ plus Pride Month. Fox correspondent Brian Yenis, he featured a South Californian family, and they decided to help make their child a transgender boy named Ryland. The kid's 14 years old. That's all. He's 14 years old. Ryland's parents, their names are Jeff and Hillary Whittington, right? Apparently, they encouraged their biologically female child to identify as a male from around the age of 5. You know, with an informal transition. Here's the thing. That's child abuse. All right, I'm going to just say that right there. Those parents, they should be evaluated. I think this is totally wrong in how the culture thinks this is a good thing. A 5-year-old, you're going to encourage them to transition rather than say, hey, what's going on? Let's help our child get properly oriented. The mother went so far as to claim that she would see that it was painful for the daughter even to wear feminine clothes. So Fox has been lambasted, and rightly so, by conservatives because of the story, including Ben Shapiro, who called it a complete betrayal. And you know, I have shame on them for doing that. Here's a response from popular culture commentators at Timcast. I think you should hear this. Here's what some people are now saying.
Why is Fox News airing this? I mean, and they're saying it's, quote, for me, it's just a deep spiritual belief that if you believe in God and he, you know, created us the way he wanted us, well, then, yes, he created Ryland just the way he is, said the mother.
Which means that that Ryland needs nothing to be who Ryland truly is. Doesn't need any drugs, doesn't need any surgery, right. Doesn't need any changes. Cut your hair, wear whatever clothes you want.
In fact, without anything, that's when you are who you truly
are. That's who you truly are. Exactly.
This is News Corp, which owns Fox. I think what they're doing is this is a Mott and Bailey. They give you the staged opposition, you know, the controlled opposition for a while. They did that for the last couple of years. Now you're starting to see the real propaganda.
Controlled opposition is the word here that I think is key to really understand a lot of the motives of some of the Republicans and some of the Republican news networks. I mean, what's the purpose here? What's the relevance? How is this impacting my life? What does this have to do with me living my life every single day? It has nothing to do with it. And why am I being told about this?
Again, it's all part of this culture war that we're in, the pushing of this ideology. And my heart goes out to these parents because they're just as disoriented right now as their child is. And that child needs help. Parents clearly need help as well. And shame on Fox. Shame on them for that. Hey, on another topic, scientists have found microplastics in fresh Arctic snow for the first time. This is a story that has always bothered me, and Mike McGuire is going to be stopping by. I want to get his take on this. I've often talked about this giant garbage patch, which is four times the size of the country of France in the middle of the Pacific, right? We produce so much plastic, and it's being dumped into our oceans, and, you know, the marine life, aquatic life is not only ingesting this, but it's breaking down into micro particles as well. And it's they're finding it in fish now that you're eating, by the way. And there was a study that was done that's looking at the extent of plastic pollution globally. And what researchers found, this came out of the University of Canterbury in New Zealand, they collected snow samples from as far away as Antarctica, right? 19 sites there. And all of them, every single one of those contain the tiny plastics, these microplastics. And while they're getting fresh snow in the South Pole, the Northern Hemisphere is seriously warming up, and almost the entire central part of the U.S. right now is also under some kind of extensive heat or warning, along with big chunks of Arizona and Nevada and New Mexico and Utah. I don't know where you're living right now. If you took a look at the weather map, you'd see the center of the country is red, right? Parts of Carolinas are red, and that weather, it's moving eastward. I saw some numbers earlier today. Phoenix, right, just reached 113 degrees. Las Vegas reached 109. That is records for both those cities. I mean, it's a scorcher. It's a scorcher. National Weather Service is predicting that over the next, they think, week to maybe 10 days, temperatures in the central portion are going to remain above average. But we're having a problem in this country. It's something I'm trying to put on your radar and bring to you over and over again. We have drought continuing in the southwestern part of the country, and that's going to play a huge role in whether or not residents of Phoenix are going to be able to, whether or not you're going to have to cut back on how much water you use. And we're seeing crops be affected by this. We're seeing possible rationing, seeing Lake Mead, its lowest levels. It's a serious time. I've invited Mike McGuire, who was chief meteorologist at WEHT-TV in Evanston, Indiana. He now is a very successful full-time commodity trader, and with all of his trading he does, he uses his weather knowledge, his meteorological expertise to evaluate energy and agricultural markets. And if you want to learn a little bit more about him or see what he's doing or what he thinks is coming, check out marketforum.com. That's marketforum.com. He joins me today. Hey, Mike, thank you for taking time out of your busy day. It's good to talk with you.
You're very welcome, Drew. Thanks for having me on once again.
What bizarre weather, huh? Unbelievable. I was looking at weather in Chicago, in cities like Chicago, 96-degree temperatures, 98-degree temperatures with the heat index over 100. But then you look at the blistering temperatures out west, Phoenix 113, Las Vegas 109. What's going on? I mean, what are we seeing? Is this natural part of summer or things heating up? What can you tell us?
Well, you said a lot of accurate things while I was listening to your intro earlier, Drew. The thing we hear all the time is it's not the heat, it's the humidity. Well, the humidity farther from the plains eastward makes it feel a lot hotter. It's more comfortable out west to a certain point when you get to 115 degrees. True. And then when you have the low humidity, it greatly increases the evaporation rate. So it might make a human feel more comfortable, but it makes the drought much worse. And we've got heat watches, advisories, even excessive heat warnings as far as Minneapolis right now, which is expected to hit 97 tomorrow. Here in my town, it's 96 in Evansville, Indiana right now. And I have a little tip that's helpful to a lot of people that it makes sense, but a lot of times they don't think about it. I told my wife when she left this morning, who is not doesn't do well with heat because she doesn't sweat very well, I told her to use artificial sweat. And that's what I call a little spray bottle that you can mist yourself with clean water. And it mimics clean sweat. It doesn't even smell. Yep. And you can do that throughout the day, and it can make you feel 10 or 15, like you're in an environment that's 10 or 15 degrees cooler.
Wow. That's great advice. You know, you speak about humidity, and I learned the impact humidity has on how you feel. When I was in Washington, D.C., I attended a pro-life march out there years ago, right? And the temperatures were only about 30 degrees, 32, 35. It was cold, right? But at the time, I was living in Green Bay, Wisconsin, the frozen tundra.
Yes.
And you know, you think, oh, gosh, that's got to be super cold. I remember leaving Green Bay before I got on my flight. And I must have been in the teens or must have been down around zero, somewhere there. I was pumping gas. And it felt colder in Washington, D.C. at 32 degrees than it did in Green Bay because it was so – I guess D.C. is closer to – has more water around it. I don't know. It was just – it was so bitingly cold. It was bone-chillingly cold. And it was about 30 degrees colder. So I would assume the same thing happens when we deal with the heat out in the West. When it's dry, you can tolerate it. You know, when you're in a crowded city like Philadelphia or New York or Chicago or something like that, that humidity is suffocating. It's just brutal.
Absolutely. And – where you are acclimated to, which is where you've lived for decades, makes a big difference when you go some other place where the weather is different. I have a sister that has been living in Anchorage, Alaska for 35 years. When she comes home to visit where we grew up, and my dad, who's going to be turning 97 this September and still doing well, she complains about how hot and humid it is in Michigan.
I have a daughter who lives in Houston, right? So when she comes up north, she's always cold. And yet my wife and I, when our kids were in grade school, you know, we'd go to Lambeau Field. We had lived in the Green Bay area at the time, and we ran a booth or something for the school at the time for the church, and it was a way of raising funds for them. And I remember it being brutally cold. It was below zero. I mean, the wind chill factors were like 30 below there at Lambeau that day. And there were people in shorts and some people in flip-flops. My wife said to the woman in flip-flops, what do you – oh, my husband always says my feet are so hot, she says to – but, I mean, you're right. Where you live really affects whether or not you can deal with those temperatures or not. Hey, my guest today
and
is Mike.
We live in the age of lots of – luxuries and things that weren't around 100 years ago, so we don't have to adjust to the outside environment like they did when there was no air conditioning. In the 1930s, which the two hottest years in our country's history, 1934, 1936, make this look like a picnic. But they, I mean, I'm sure there was a lot of fatalities and whatnot, but when you live most of your life inside a conditioned environment, warmed up in the winter, cool off in the summer, you never get allow your body to acclimate to the outside conditions, which back in the 1930s was also the inside conditions.
Hey, let's take a call or two for you quickly, and then we'll take a short break. But I want to go to Germany, believe it or not. Marcel is listening to us there. I think he's a Canadian-American, if I remember correctly. Marcel, good afternoon or good evening to you.
Welcome. Hey, good evening. And I'm definitely acclimated to weather from different places that I've lived, and so that is definitely true. I really appreciate your guest that you have, Drew. They're always so informative. Yes. And I'm just wondering if he could comment about weather in Canada, Western Canada, where we get a lot of grain and agriculture is such a big thing. I have family and originally from Saskatchewan.
Wow.
But I'm just wondering if he could comment on Canada, plus also their northern reaches with all the, you know, above the tundra and all of that.
So you're curious. And Peter, Mike, let's take a quick break. We can come back. I'll let you answer that. wants to know how the changing climate is going to affect crops in Canada as well. So if you want to join us, feel free to dial in. The number here is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. We come back, we'll respond to Marcel, who's listening to us in Germany. I always love the reach. Yeah, it's so great to be able to have you as part of the Relevant Radio family here. Also, drought. If you are living in the western part of the United States, well, things aren't getting any better. I'll fill you in on what they're now saying. Stay with me. This hour is sponsored by Ave Maria Mutual Funds, where financial goals are aligned with pro-life values and fund decisions are based on investment fundamentals designed to preserve and grow wealth without violating moral beliefs. More information at AveMariaFunds.com.
Connecting you with the big guy upstairs. You're listening to The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, it's good to be with you today. Thanks for joining me. If you're just getting tuned in, I'm speaking to a commodity trader, a former meteorologist, and a man who has been able to apply the sciences to what we're now seeing, you know, in terms of the markets and crops. You know, I'm concerned a little bit about what's going to happen as a result of the war in Ukraine with wheat, with crops, what food costs are going to be like with the rise in gas and with these unbelievable temperatures that we're now seeing. I was reading a report a little bit earlier today just about this drought that we are encountering in the West. And what it means for alfalfa production, what it means for a lot of other crops that are being grown there. And farmers between Phoenix and Tucson are already being hit with, you know, water cuts. And you go state to state and highlight a lot of these. So my guest, I said, Mike McGuire, Marcel is listening to us in Germany. He's Canadian-American, and he raised a good question, too. Well, what about Canada? And, Mike, I'm going to throw the net a little bit wider. Let me respond to him there. But also, what about America? There's already rising food costs in this country, and some are concerned about food production as well. So if you could address both those issues, Marcel's question about Canadian crops and what you think we're going to see here in the States.
I would love to do that. And glad to hear from somebody in Europe today. That's kind of a surprise, but I have a brother, who, Gary, that's been living in Prague, the Czech Republic, for 25 years, and he keeps me connected to
beautiful
what's
city.
Going on out there. But in this case, we'll focus in on the country of Canada and agriculture, and of course, everybody knows about climate change, which is basically global warming. The Earth as a whole, the average temperature of the Earth has increased about 1 degree Celsius over the last 100 years because of the increase in carbon dioxide and greenhouse gas warming. But the higher latitudes are warming faster than the lower latitudes. So the coldest places are warming up the fastest. And the countries in the north, like Russia and Canada and northern parts of China, actually are benefiting from the warming because their limitation has to do with the growing length of the growing season. They can't plant crops in the spring until the soils warm up and the risk of frost is over, and then they have a limited time to accumulate heating and warming growing degree days during the growing season before they harvest. And if the first freeze in the fall comes too early, it will damage crops that aren't mature yet. So basically, the higher latitudes are going to be net beneficial for because of the global warming. With regards to the United States, specifically this, let's talk in a general sense. Since 1988, the U.S. Corn Belt has only had one drought, the one in 2012, which was a widespread severe drought in the Midwest. That's a record for the longest period in time to only have one drought. Previously, we averaged one drought about every 8 years.
Wow.
And part of that is because of climate change. It's actually increased the beneficial weather in the Midwest. We're getting more moisture, and the tightly packed rows of corn in about 8 or 9 states, Minnesota, Iowa, Indiana, Illinois, Kentucky, Ohio, Nebraska especially, are creating a microclimate. So what's happening is the evapotranspiration coming from all these corn plants is actually adding a tremendous amount of moisture, which is recycling in the atmosphere, and it's causing more rainfall, and wetter soils also reduce the excessive heat in the summer, typically, during the growing season, because dry soils heat up a lot quicker. Wet soils, just like the like your perspiration cools you, well, wet soils also have evaporation going on, and it actually cools the air temperature. So there has been mostly benefits from climate change over the areas we're discussing.
Yeah. First of all, thank you for your call. It's good to hear from you, Marcel, in Germany. And call anytime. It's always good to have you be part of the family here. I want to follow up on what you said there, though, too, if I could, just about whether or not the West is seeing perhaps a mega drought. And I've heard some comments, some commentary on this. And I always look at things, you know, why are we seeing this? How temporary? Is it a sign of the times? I mean, what's going on? There was a study that was done. I think they were looking at places in the Golden State and other parts of the West where the drought is the worst. And scientists were saying that not only reservoirs dauntingly low, Mike, but this is one of the worst droughts that we've seen in about 1,200 years. And they're saying, look, the American Southwest is no longer in drought. It's in an aridification, if you will, in Arizona and in the Colorado River Basin. And a lot of consumption. You know, you take a look at cities like Los Angeles and San Francisco. They're struggling to cut their water. You know, you take a look at what's happening to those state reservoirs there. Water levels in Lake Powell, which is the second largest reservoir on the Colorado, has dropped 24%. You and I have talked about Lake Mead in the past. And, you know, I'm not sure how much credence to give these geologists when it comes to time frames or to what we're seeing. You know, what we do know is that every millennia or two, mega drought can last for, they say, multiple centuries. Are we going to see a drought, something like we saw in the 1930s with the Dust Bowl? What do you see coming? And how do you read that? I mean, are things going to intensify, or is this a little blip on the radar, if you will?
This is an extremely profound point that you're making, Drew, because human beings have only recorded weather accurately for about the last 150 years.
Right.
But we can go back in time and look at certain indicators that tell us what the weather was like 1,000 or 2,000 years ago. And unfortunately, the Southwest has had a history of droughts, and you were referring to this, I'm sure, of 200-year-long droughts. So hopefully we're not going back to that historical pattern, but it would be typical more. And the recent wet weather has in the Southwest has actually been unusual. We had a lot more because of global warming. In the warmer Pacific, we had a lot more El Niños, and El Niños bless us with tremendous amounts of rain. This is also a big reason that the Midwest hasn't had very many severe droughts. Well, it also caused California to be the wettest it's ever been in history, looking wow. back thousands of years. And so tens of millions of people moved out there, assuming that the weather was going to continue like it was in the 80s and 90s. And now it's reverting back to closer to the historical norm if you look back hundreds of years. But this current drought looks like it will be more short-lived, and it's correlated to the current Pacific Ocean, which is cool water anomalies in the east and central tropical Pacific. And what that does, it's the total opposite of an El Nino. The La Nina shuts down the jet stream, and it causes an upper-level ridge in the west and sometimes into the Midwest. And that's what we've had. This is going to be the third summer in a row with the La Nina, wow. and it's totally responsible for the current drought, which wasn't there in 2019. It really got going in 2020, mm-hmm. worsened in some places in 2021, and now this is going to be the third summer in a year with that drought in some places being even worse. The one positive thing about the short-term outlook is there something, and people who live in the Southwest know this very well, there's something called the summer monsoon, which typically hits Arizona and New Mexico and brings half, in a 2 or 3 month period, they get half of their year's total. Wow. Places like Tucson, believe it or not, will get an average of 3 inches per month in July and August. And right now, those are the locations with the worst wildfires going on because they're so dry and the summer monsoon hasn't kicked in yet. But the good news, Drew, is that later this week, the summer monsoon is going to kick in a couple of weeks early. Initially, the vegetation and everything is super dry and hasn't been moistened yet. So the lightning from the thunderstorms triggers more fires the first week or so of the monsoon. And then after things start getting wetted down and the dryness is moderated, by the second or third week of the monsoon kicking in, the wildfires just plunge. But here's some bad news now to go on the other side of it. The La Nina we have in the Pacific currently, it is not going to change for the next several months. So it's going to continue to produce the hot, dry weather impact downstream for much of the West outside of the summer monsoon, which is has its own unique dynamics that are separated from the La Nina. Yep. But the Weather Service forecast for this coming summer because of the La Nina is hot and dry for July and summer, August.
Well, hey, Mike, thank you for your expertise. It's always good to talk with you. I'm going to pray for good weather. I'm going to ask God to be merciful to this country. That's for sure. And I know we'll have you back to talk about climate change. We've often talked about how warming temperatures aren't always necessarily a bad thing. Carbon's not always necessarily a bad thing, but that's a whole other conversation. Thank you, though, for being here. We'll catch up again soon, okay?
Thank you so much for inviting me, Drew. I look forward to it.
You got it. That's Mike McGuire. You can check him out as well, as I said. He's got a website. You can check him out at, I'm trying to remember off the top of my head, it's Market Forum, marketforum.com. And Mike is a full-time commodities trader, so he monitors what goes on, both in the weather and what's happening. Yeah, I look at things spiritually, too, here, just as a side note, just a follow-up to what he said there. You know, you take a look at whether or not we're going to experience a mega drought. God is in control of everything. I always want to go back to that. This can be very frightening to hear these types of conversations. People can get kind of freaked, you know, when you see Lake Mead's water levels drop by 70-some percent, you know, when you hear about water rationing, but you also have to realize on the other side of this, God's in control of weather. And God, he's the creator of the laws of nature, and he's the one who, you know, allows it to rain. Historically, these mega droughts that have taken place, they have led to the fall of empires. They have led to causing mass migration of humans away from these drought-affected type of lands, and I don't know what we're going to see. I know historically there have been several pre-industrial civilizations, including the Anasazi of North America, the North American Southwest, I should say. You've got the Khmer Empire of Cambodia, you know, the Mayan of Mesoamerica. I mean, you can go through a whole list of this. I believe that, you know, God's in control. Faustina, and we'll be praying the chaplet in a minute, she prayed on an arid day for rain. She prayed the chaplet over and over again, and it rained. You know, in the midst of a violent storm, she prayed the storm away. So God hears our prayers as well, and I just think we should ask for his mercy. You know, let's call upon his mercy. This Colorado River, let's pray for mercy on the Colorado. With all of the tributaries that it has, it supplies water to about 40 million people. 40 million people. So as that water continues to drop, it should give everybody cause and maybe even greater reason to pray. Stay with me. Come back. I'll share with you a little bit about my wife's favorite saint. I'll open the phones, too, because I'd love to hear from you. Stay with me.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. You'll get some real Catholic answers right here.
Catholic Order of Foresters, the sponsor of our studio line, is hiring today with several positions throughout the U.S. Visit relevantradio.com/Forrester to learn more about how you can find your vocation with COF, an Illinois Life Insurance Society, not licensed in all states.
The Chaplet of Divine Mercy, live, coming up. You're listening to The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
I can't wait to pray with you. Of course, I'll try to take as many calls as I can. Of course, if you have a prayer intention or a need, two ways you can get it to us. One, Twitter, at Drew Mariani Show. That's our Twitter handle, at Drew Mariani Show. Maggie will scour that and compile many of your intentions, bring them to air for our spiritual family here to pray for. You can follow me at Drew Mariani if you want to follow that Twitter handle. I'm not the greatest on Twitter, and I should be much more active, but if you get news stories or comments or something you want to send along, please do that, and certainly leave us your prayer intentions. Also, I am heading on pilgrimage. You probably have heard that that spot running. If you want me to take your prayer intentions with me to Israel, to some of these incredible places where we'll be praying. Well, we're going to have Mass. Some of the holiest places, you know, in that land. We're going to be by the Jordan. We're going to be where Christ transfigured. We're going to be on the Sea of Galilee where he walked and calmed the storm. You know, we're going to be at Calvary and at the tomb. You know, we're going to be where he resurrected Lazarus. I mean, there's going to be lots of incredible places that we're going to visit. I'm going to pray to all these places. You know, every day we pray. Every day we pray the rosary and the chaplet, and of course there's Mass. And I just know that as I take a pilgrimage, as I go on this, for me it's kind of a spiritual journey. I always enjoy the culture, but it's a way for me really to get connected to God. One of the best pilgrimages I've ever taken was to Poland. And I had been there a couple times beforehand, but there was one where I just was able to pray at some of the places of John Paul II and St. Faustina. And I felt when I came back, I was so on fire for the faith. I was so re-energized. I got my spiritual batteries recharged. And that's what happens on these trips. I know not everybody can come. I know that, you know, it's costly. I know that it's time, you know, and I know that some people have apprehension. But I'll be more than glad to pray for you. And please go to relevantradio.com/Drew, relevantradio.com/Drew. Scroll past my podcast, go past, you know, there's a little video there talking about some of the places I'm going to pray. And then give me your prayer intention. And I'll be more than pray for your son, your daughter, your family, your business, whatever it might be, your health, that's future spouse you're looking for, whatever it might be. We'll pray. All right, we'll pray for that discernment, and I'll take it with me. If you're interested, more information is found at relevantradio.com/Holy Land, relevantradio.com/Holy Land. I just got a text from Peter Grandich. He is our Wall Street wise guy, or former Wall Street. What does he call himself, Maggie? I'm zoning out.
The Confession, whiz kid.
The whiz kid, the wise guy. Sounds like a mafia. A mafioso is a wise guy. Peter, I apologize if you're tuned in. He sent me a text, and in fact, he's going to join us, I think, this Friday to take a look at what's going on in the economy. I think his wife and one of his best friends' wives are going to join us, too. So I'm looking forward to getting a chance to spend some time with them as well. So information, relevantradio.com/Holy Land if you want more info. I do want to talk, if we can, just about one of my wife's boyfriends. Yeah, I know that sounds weird, right? But I say St. Anthony has got a crush on her. I do. I said there, she is in love with St. Anthony. He is her patron because whenever she loses something, she prays to him, and it's instantly found. I said, man, I said, St. Anthony's in love with you. I said, I'm glad that man's a saint because I'd be a little jealous here. I never saw a saint intercede like St. Anthony does for her. If it lost keys, lost shoes, lost Bogomil, whatever it might be, right? And she always said, ever since our kids were little, that, you know, as he would answer her prayers, that she would spread that devotion. She'd pass it on to our children and spread his devotion as well. And, you know, he's become kind of a patron of mine as well. I love him for a little bit of a different reason. You might love him for the fact that, I don't know, you know, there's, you know, you're praying to him for lost things. If you're looking for a future spouse, you might want to pray to St. Anthony. You know, I have a friend. In fact, I was on a pilgrimage to Lisbon, Portugal. And when I was in Lisbon, there's a shrine dedicated to him. Yeah, he's St. Anthony of Padua, but actually he ended up in Lisbon. I'll fill you in on a story. Bottom line is, my a friend of mine went on this trip. They were praying for their daughter to find a spouse. They prayed at this particular place. We're going to our wedding in about 2 weeks, my wife and I. It's pretty amazing how prompt it is. I prayed to him because he was known as a great orator. He had this incredible ability to communicate, and that's what I do. You know, I don't know if you know this or not. Anthony was not necessarily from Padua. He was actually from Portugal. As an Italian, I like to claim him as my own. But he is St. Anthony of Padua because his body's actually buried there. In fact, when he died on this day back in 1231. His body was buried in a little Franciscan church in St. Mary in Padua. If you ever get a chance, go there, right? It's an unbelievable place. And when they went to exhume him, right, to his body, to go ahead and place him in this place under the high altar, below the high altar, they found his body had been reduced to dust, right? And you're saying, well, that shouldn't surprise you, right? Yeah, everything was reduced to dust and bone, except for two things. His tongue was left intact. It was, they say it was lifelike. And his vocal cords are there as well. I know it sounds kind of creepy, right? This was taken as a sign from God confirming the incredible gift that he gave to Anthony to preach and to teach. And St. Anthony, one of those powerful, powerful saints. So I often call upon him. Maybe you need to make a presentation. Why not call upon St. Anthony? His story is an amazing one. His tongue, by the way, it's in a special reliquary. And it could be seen today in a separate chapel. I think it's on the epistle side of the basilica. But in 1310, the basilica was almost finished, and the remains were transferred to a tomb. And, when they discovered his tongue, you know, his vocal cords, it's again, one of these mysteries. And I look at it this way. If you ever saw St. Bernadette of Lourdes, if you take a look at any of these great saints who lived lives of complete dedication to God, who lived lives of purity and heroic virtue, God, in some instances, preserves their bodies. And there have been saints who have been dead for hundreds, for centuries, for millennia, really. I think it was in Venice where I was praying one day, and I saw a saint there. I forget her name. She is incorrupt to this day, right? I mean, how do you survive not just 10 years, not just 100 years, not just 1,000 years, but almost 2,000 years. I think in 300, they found her body floating in the salt water. She was incorrupt. I don't remember her name. Somebody might know and can pass on, but that's just one of many, many saints. They say that Padre Pio was incorrupt at one point when they exhumed him, but a lot of these great saints, absolutely amazing, amazing stories of incorruptibles. You go to the Vatican, there are incorruptibles there that you can see as well. But that's because, again, as I go back to this point over and over again, God's in control of everything, right? God is in control of everything. The rate your body decays, whether he raises somebody from the dead, whether he removes your cancer, whether he reverses your finances, whether he allows it to rain, whether the drought ends, God is in control of everything. So never forget that. Put your trust in God. Put your trust in God. And I guarantee you, you will never be disappointed. You'll never be disappointed. Today, I call upon St. Anthony, one of the most beloved Catholic saints in the world. You know, he was a powerhouse saint. And I love his story because he actually witnessed, he was on his way. Back in 1219, St. Anthony had this meeting with some Franciscans. There were five of them. They were on their way to preach in Morocco. And they were martyred. They were put to death during their mission, and their bodies were mutilated. They were brought back to Spain, right? They were carried in this solemn procession. And St. Anthony, after seeing this, was so moved by the Franciscan sacrifice, laying their life down, their lifestyle, their simple lifestyle. He asked for permission to join the Franciscans, and that's what he did. He took the name Anthony after after St. Anthony the Great. And he wanted to go to Morocco to follow in their footsteps to preach the gospel, but this is how God works, right? His homebound ship never reached Spain. A storm forced it to land on the coast of Italy. And Franciscans there had pity on him, and they allowed him into their little, you know, town. And St. Anthony lived as a hermit. He worked in the kitchen. But he had an educated background. I don't know whether they didn't know this or they ignored it, but of course he became renowned for his preaching and miracles. And let's call upon him today, too, for some of these great miracles that you and I are going to ask God for. I mean, there were some multiplications. There were miracles regarding, you know, the Eucharist and so much more. You know, talking about God being in control of nature and floods and things like that. One day he was preaching in a square, and it began to rain. But it didn't rain on those who he was preaching the word of God to. didn't rain on them. And that's not the first time I heard that story. I heard of a missionary down in the Amazon who was doing the same thing, and he began to pray, and he asked God to hold off the rain. The rain stopped right there midair. You know, people saw this. He wasn't even aware of it because he was in the middle of preaching. But that's what happened with St. Anthony. Other stories, like there was a man who amputated his foot, you know. He kicked his mother, this kid, in a fit of anger, and Anthony told him, you know, you deserve that foot cut off, so the kid did it. And when Anthony heard about it, he immediately went, he prayed, and he reattached the foot. You know, I know you think that's incredible. I don't believe that. Well, if God can raise somebody from the dead, right? If cancer can disappear, why can't a miraculous regeneration or attachment take place? Let's pray like people of faith when I return. The chaplain is straight ahead.